right, time to head up to Winton, where we say very good morning to our old mate Richard Crowell. G'day, Richard.
Morning, Shrek. How are you?
I'm excellent, thank you, mate. And before we actually kick off supercars and other matters up at Winton this weekend, I'll just have a quick chat to you. What was it, about 45 minutes ago, a massive crash for Sebastian Bourdais. Did you get a chance to see that IndyCar 500 qualifying?
Yeah, I have. I've been watching it actually up here in the media room at Winton, and day one qualifying at the Indy 500. And for those that are unaware, it's a two-day process. They set the starting field today and then actually set the order tomorrow morning our time. They'll do pole qualifying. Massive crash for Bourdais. Turn two was on the third lap of his four-lap run. The grid is determined by a four-lap average. He was heading into turn two, 230 miles an hour, so about 370 kilometres an hour. Rear end of the car snapped. He caught it, but unfortunately it overcorrected, and when you're doing 380 k's an hour, it's pretty hard to catch a sideways race car. He flicked the car hard right up into the fence, and then the car rolled over. Violent impact. The latest we've heard is that he was first taken to the infield medical centre and then taken, we believe, to Methodist Hospital, which is the closest hospital to the speedway. So we hope Sebastian Bourdais is all right. It's a massive shame, Shebex, because he's been the fastest guy for the month of May so far, and his first two laps were good enough to put him on provisional pole. So a massive blow for him and Dale Coyne Racing, and we just hope now that he's okay and he can bounce back and they can get him back on track for the race next weekend.
And where the massive blow is that Dale Coyne Racing doesn't have the budget of Penske and Andretti's, yeah, and those sort of guys, and to be punching way above their weight. And they had the highest average on the first two, or Bourdais had the highest average on the first two laps by a mile. So this would have been a serious race car come Indy 500 next week.
Yeah, and look, it may still will be, and they'll have a spare chassis. Hopefully they can fix it. But you're right, they're one of the smaller teams in the paddock. They don't have a big budget, but hopefully they can get it back. But, I mean, that's probably a secondary concern now. We hope that Bourdais is okay. And fortunately, IndyCar are the world leaders in safety and innovation in safety and motor racing. And they've had so many advancements in protecting their drivers against crashes like that because those cars are so fast. They carry so much energy. They're so strong. They're very, very strong racing cars. So we hope Bourdais all right, and we hope that he's good to go for next weekend. But obviously our first concern is with him and making sure that the human being part of the race car is all good.
Yeah, one of the nice guys of the track as well. And it's been a bad week, hasn't it, for crashes with Bourdais.
Oh, yeah.
Nicky Hayden, we're going to have a chat to Mark Brax later on about that. And then last night, did you get a chance to see Jack Miller?
Yeah, how lucky is he?
Goodness me.
Unbelievable guy. Get away with that. More, probably better luck than better management, but amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Jewish, good racing yesterday up there at Winton, as it always gives us, no doubt about it. There was a couple of hard luck stories. I think James Courtney probably considers himself one of those, but Scotty McLaughlin and Team Penske, DJR Team Penske, they are just the hot item at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, and isn't it interesting how the form has switched from Fabian Coulthard to Scotty and that team after Barbagallo? It's amazing. You know, you talk about momentum in sport. It's a thing, isn't it? And it's a thing in motor racing, and McLaughlin had such a good weekend over in Perth, and he's picked up where they left off. Fabian wasn't terrible. He was P3, but Scotty was pretty comfortable all day yesterday and looked really, really good. It was a great motor race, though. Really, really entertaining. And do you know what I think contributed to that was the fact that it rained on Friday, and both sessions on Friday were very, very wet. So everyone went into the 1 45-minute practice session yesterday morning with a blank sheet of paper.
Yeah.
And I think it might have just jumbled the field a little bit. Some guys were probably stronger than others. And that lack of practice, I think, just shook things up. And maybe the cars weren't as perfectly fine-tuned as perhaps they would have been had they run in dry conditions all day on Friday. So what we saw was a really good motor race. In fact, I'd go as far as to say that was probably one of the better races of the year, Shebex, in supercars. Well, it was pretty straightforward out in front. You had the world championship for 10th place fought out between 10 cars. So 10th through 20th were having this amazing scrap at the end of the motor race. But then you also had some strategy games playing out, and you had David Reynolds, Will Davison and Craig Lowndes run longer before their pit stop. And emerge up the order. So Craig Lowndes, I think he was 18th. He started that race yesterday and ended up in the top six by making a really good strategy call. And Will Davison was even better. So some really compelling storylines throughout that race. And it was hard to look at what the winners were doing because there was so much going on throughout the field.
Yeah, it certainly was. You're spot on there, Richard. Let's talk about the Courtney and Perkan incident. Your take on that?
Oh, it's hard to say. I mean, just on Courtney for a second. Usually when a football team sacks their coach, and they'll come out the next week and they'll get a win, won't they? Like, that's the law in the AFL almost, by nature, that they get rid of the coach and they'll win the next game. That hasn't worked for Walkinshaw Racing and the HSV Racing team. Adrian Burgess gone before the round. Ryan Walkinshaw fronted the media yesterday and talked about that. They had an absolute Barry Crocker yesterday, qualifying the bottom end of the top 20, and Courtney was just involved in incidents throughout the motor race. And yeah, the clash with Perkat, I'm not sure what to make of that, to be honest. And they both had pretty stout opinions of it. Perkat was probably a little bit more frustrated than anything because he qualified so well on Brad Jones Racing home turf and wasn't able to translate that great qualifying performance into a race result, which would be incredibly frustrating when it's so hard to get in the top 10 in this series. So, yeah, it was just throwing more fuel on the fire at Walkinshaw Racing and what's been a pretty rotten year for them so far.
No doubt. Another guy that would have been fairly frustrated, I think, would have been Chas Mostert.
Yeah, not wrong. See, the PRA are looking good, though, aren't they? And we talked about this at Barbagello, that it's now very much a three-way fight. And I suppose what we had yesterday was validation of that. Phillip Island was an exceptional circumstance because of the tyre dramas that were going on there, so you weren't really sure if that result was aided by just getting lucky on tyre. Barbagello is such a unique surface and low grip, high wear. So this is the third different kind of surface, different kind of racing we've had in a row, and ProDrive Racing have been quick in all of them, as have Red Bull, HRT, and as have the Shell V-Power Ford. So it's definitely a three-way fight. Unlucky for Chas. He was brilliant yesterday, really strong. But unfortunately, there's not much you can do when your car breaks. But he'll bounce back today. I think big picture, it validates that he's a championship contender this year.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, they seem to find some speed and some power in the Red Bull cars of Shane Van Gisbergen and Jamie Whincup. But once again, their sort of dramas for 2017 really continue, don't they?
Yeah, they're not brilliant. But they're not shocking. No, they're not. I mean, Jamie finished second, so not a terrible day at the office. But I suppose when you've won six championships, P2 is probably not good enough.
But you'd like, but they would, and they've had it so often in the past, a weekend where they're good from the start on Friday to the end on Sunday. They don't want to be sporadic as they are at the moment.
Yeah. Sporadic's probably a good word, actually, because they are a bit over the shop. They're not as consistent as they used to be. But it is, have they dropped off? Or is it just that everyone else has raised their game?
Good call.
And I'm probably going for more of the latter on that. We know Penske stepped up. I'm pretty certain ProDrive Racing's taken a big step.
Everyone else had to step up, didn't they?
Correct, to beat them. So have they just come back to the pack a little bit? I think that's what it is. I think it's brilliant because now what we see is the response. We see how good a race car team 888 Race Engineering is under pressure. So they're now under serious pressure for a championship. They're going to be under serious pressure in every single race, where in the last few years that might not have been the case. So I think it's great, and it's going to be a storyline to watch is their response to the performance of these Shell V-Power Fords, which, remember, are being engineered by one of their ex-engineers, Ludo Lacroix, who left the team last year. So it's a pretty compelling storyline, Shebex, and the response and the reaction will be impressive.
And do not underestimate the amount of
influence
that Ludo has had in that team coming to where they are now.
And don't underestimate 888 either.
No, never. Yes.
That's a team with a lot of engineering depth, with a lot of smart people, with good resource. And bear in mind, their three drivers are Craig Lowndes, Shane Van Gisbergen and Jamie Whincup. So between them, there's 10 Supercars championships. And umpteen Bathurst victories, and you know, I think there's more than, 225 race victories between the three drivers, probably more, actually. So they'll be right. Interesting storyline, though.
Yeah, and just like the Richmond Football Club, they know you've got to be super competitive at the end of the year. You can lose a couple in the middle.
Yeah, it's that fourth quarter, Shebex, in motor racing as well. You need to be good right to the checkered flag.
Exactly. Let's have a look at what else is happening up there, mate. You're covering a couple of other categories, Touring Car Masters. John Bow, just from the back of the field. Excuse me, folks, I'll just come through there and win this one.
Yeah, it's hugely entertaining car race, though. Yeah, it started 23rd in the reverse grid race, blazed his way through the field. Had a really good battle with Bruce Williams, who's back in the category with brand new sponsorship, actually, from AC Delco. We should acknowledge a new sponsor back into the sport. So two Tiranas squabbling it out at the front. We should mention today's results aren't reverse grid, so they go off qualifying. And Jason Gomesal, who we've talked about a bit on this show in the past, amateur driver, so he's not a retired professional or a young guy coming through the ranks. He got his first ever pole position. He edged out John Bow by 0.02 of a second, which is the second closest margin in TCM history. But really good performance for the Tirana driver, and great to see him grab a pole. And he was pretty satisfied to knock off John Bow, given he's a businessman first and racing car driver about third or fourth. And John Bow's John Bow. So yeah, really good performance by Jason.
Kumos are up there?
Yep, about touring cars. And actually, while Brad Jones Racing had a tough day in the Supercars Championship, it was a good day for them in the third tier of supercar racing in Australia. Young gun Jack Smith, who's running in their Super 2 program as well, grabbed his first Kumo Series win and the second for Brad Jones Racing in supercar racing. So really good performance by those guys. Jordan Boyce, who won at Phillip Island, really good drive from him. Started 8th, ended up finishing P3. So really good job, carved his way through the field. We should mention Aaron Seaton, son of two-time champ and legend of the sport and all-round nice guy Glenn, unfortunately was only able to get 3 corners in his first race in the touring car and ended up parked in the turn 3 gravel after being whacked off the start finish line. So not his fault, but he'll bounce back today.
Yeah, he certainly will. What do we expect happens supercars-wise today, Richard?
Longer race, 2 pit stops. So strategy will play a bigger role. I think after what we saw yesterday, that the tyre degradation wasn't as much as we thought it would be. So they'll run longer in that race. And we saw those guys get that track position by going longer in the first stint. So I think if you're buried in the field, you run long, you stay out and make your stop a bit later in the motor race. But it'll be the same 3 teams at the front. But watch out for BJR because their guys have been fast and Nick Kirkat qualified really well yesterday. So if they can string it together, a surprise like Slady's win last year might not be out of the question. I don't know if they win, but maybe a podium for those guys would be a really good result this weekend.
And we spend a lot of time picking and talking about different things that supercars do, rules and regulations-wise and everything, but can we just give a massive, massive applause for the 3 wildcards that they've handed out for this race at Winton and the opportunity for guys such as James Golding and Shea Davis and Macaulay Jones, giving them the opportunity to actually run against the big boys and see how they go, and they didn't let themselves down.
No, they performed very, very admirably, easy to some say.
That's the word.
And beat a lot of the full-timers. Really, I thought Jimmy Golding drove really well. Shea Davis deserves a tip of the hat in the Nissan. And Macaulay Jones, obviously, BJR's home turf. No, they did a good job, mate. It's a great program. It's amazing how the 3 extra cars make quite a big impact on that grid.
Yeah.
Having 29 cars, it was really good, really good. But they've been well-received, and they're all great drivers, and they're all potential stars of the future, I think, of our game.
Enjoy the day, mate, and we'll catch up at Phillip Island next week for the round of the Shannon's Nationals, which should be quite exciting with the Cura Cup and the GTs on the card.
Looking forward to it, mate, and we'll keep you posted on Sebastian Bourdais as well.
Good on you, mate. Thanks. Richard Crowell joining us up there from Winton. A break. Back with more in just a tick.
On 11:16 SEM, on the grid with Tony Shebeki for Bendix Brakes. At your next car service, ask your mechanic to fit Bendix Brakes. Don't accept anything else.
It's 11 minutes to 9 here on 11:16 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy. So that's Winton and all that wrapped up. But we've still got Indy qualifying going on at the moment, so we hopefully give you a leader in that, as we've only got a couple of cars to go. Still no word on Sebastian Bourdais and how he is faring after that massive accident. But speaking of accidents, what shocking news we received this week in regards to MotoGP champion Nicky Hayden being hit off a push bike. It's just amazing that you could ride tracks around the world at over 300 kilometres an hour put your life in risk, and you receive, you know, a little broken bone or a graze here and all that sort of stuff. But as we welcome Mark Brax to the program, Braxy, you could just never fathom the fact that Nicky Hayden could effectively be, you know, taken from us for the fact that he was riding 30 k's on a push bike.
Yeah, exactly, mate. It's just one of those things, and it hasn't been lost in guys in the paddock. By the way, good morning, Shebex. Yeah, it hasn't been lost on guys in the paddock where they made the crews, the riders, most of them are all push bike fanatics as well, and it just proves that it can happen to anybody. And yeah, like you said, you can be running around the track at 100 odd kilometres an hour, 200 mile an hour and all the rest of it, and yet something simple like that, it really reminded me of how Mike Arlwood left the planet when he went out to get some fish and chips and ran up the back of a truck after what he'd been through.
Yeah.
Some argue the greatest of all time as well. But
isn't it funny, that, Braxy, the irony in all this, and even if you look at Michael Schumacher, these guys are in control of their life on a missile, effectively, every second week of their life as an adult, as they race motorbikes or they race motor cars. And in a situation where they have absolutely no control, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. It just shows you that, you know, it's a dangerous sport, but real life can be more dangerous, can't it? You know, just every day. And you've got to take your heart's got to go out for the guy that was actually driving the car, from the reports that I've been receiving. And obviously I've been trolling the internet trying to find out as much information as possible and getting in touch with people and stuff that are over there. Poor bloke didn't even see him. And when you see the photos of the incident and the photos of the car and the damage to the car, being him on the left-hand side driver and Nicky approaching from the right-hand side, I reckon he might have just got either the sun's got him or he's just got in that blind spot with the pillar that you can't see him. A modern, you know, all the cars are very safe, but because they've built them up that much, you lose your sight of vision. And you'd only have to look, you know, just miss it by that nanosecond, which he has, because Nicky's hit the car that hard that he's actually, he's face planted the windscreen. That's what's actually broken the windscreen. So we're talking about the head injuries, as in brain damage and everything, but he's got a lot of physical injury as well.
He has severe brain damage, we believe.
Well, everybody's trying to think that it's not, but obviously there is some head injury there, but there was all these other doomsday reports coming through. But his mother, Rose, is over there. His fiancée, Jackie, who he is due to marry in the summer break. His brother, Tommy, is over there, who's the rail of the family. Poor old Earl, his father, who's stood beside him since the day he first threw a leg over a motorbike, and has been his rock for the three brothers, rock for two, but older brother Tommy and younger brother, Roger Lee, pardon me, my apologies. Poor old Earl's had to stay in Owensboro, Kentucky, the hometown, because he's suffering heart problems and can't travel, so to be ripping his heart apart, pardon the pun, but and I think what they'd be doing is just trying to get as much information as they can. You know, you put it, you're in a strange country, your son's in a strange Italian hospital, you're trying to communicate with these doctors, and obviously they speak English. I'm not saying all that wrong, but when you've got that, just that barrier of trying to get all the gist of what you're trying to get through, and Tommy's been in contact with specialists in America, their main objective would be to get him home to America, but obviously with the conditions in, they can't fly him and stuff, so they're sending all the information to America to try and get information out of them. And I wouldn't be surprised if they fly a couple of surgeons and specialists over to Richie only there on the Adriatic coast of the hospital, where the Cesena hospital, and get some expert opinions before they take any further action with him. And just if he's in a stable condition, well, it's the best thing for him. You know, he can just be unconscious in that coma, and hopefully they can figure things out to him. And we've seen a lot of other things happen with guys with head injuries before, and you think they're gone and they've come back from it. There's one of the guys racing super sports, American Spanish guy. He had a really bad accident a couple of years ago, but now he's right back racing dirt track and stuff. So where there's life, there's hope. And, you know, as I say, when people ask me, how do you feel of a morning, you say, great, I wake up. And I suppose that's the best thing we can say to Nicky Hayden, that there's another day under his belt as well. And while he's there, there's hope that something maybe happened. But hopefully he can get back to it. But at the moment, things aren't looking good for him. Very, very unfortunate, because he is I've known him for 12 years.
Yeah.
And we set up a friendship when I was doing the GPs and stuff. Great family. And to see something like this happen to a guy, pardon me, I do get a bit emotional with it.
No, I totally understand, Braxy. I'll give you a chance to get yourself and composed in what is a tough situation for everyone who knew the guy, because he was, I'd only met him a few times in the paddock, but he was a larger-than-life character, loved life, was always ready for a joke, and one of the better guys.
He never said anything bad about anybody.
No, true.
Never caned his bike if the bike was, he never said public and things in public if the bike wasn't up to speed or up to his satisfaction. And a whole reflection on his family, as I said to Earl one time when he won the world championship, I said he might be a world champion, but he's a world champion bloke as well. And that sums up the entire Hayden family. They're just one of those, probably like there's the Waters family here, three sons racing. They're all in it together and everything. It's just one of those, the fickle finger of fate, as they say, mate. It's just come out of the sky one second either way, and he'd be getting ready for the race at Donington next weekend in a World Superbike event.
Yeah.
But, and as the boys at the front row press conference said at Le Mans yesterday, we'll be doing, every one of them will be riding for Nicky tomorrow or later on this evening our time. So the whole world's behind him, and if he can take strength and anything out of all our thoughts, he's well on the road to recovery because everybody's right behind him.
All right, let's focus on what's happening in the now, Braxy, and that is, of course, as you said, MotoGP in France at the moment. And gee whiz, Jack Miller's got himself in some hot water. First of all, on Friday, with a comment to Jorge Lorenzo where he told him to shove his opinion up his backside.
Well, he didn't actually say that. Well, he had the Aussie vernacular, didn't he? Everyone's got one. They're like opinions
are like assholes. Everyone has one.
Everyone's got one. Yeah, and I think as they said, Lost in the Translation. Didn't they make a movie about that or something?
I think you're right.
The Mallorca maybe just and when he came out in one of the press releases and said you don't say things like that to a 5-time world champion. I'm thinking, well, George, you're getting a bit precious, mate. You better start. You start to get some results on the track. And by that accident that he had yesterday, that was the first of two. We had another one in Q. Q2 yesterday afternoon in front of Valentino Rossi, only a small get off, but that one at the fastest corner of the track.
Goodness me!
And irony about it, that was the thing that got Jorge's back up was the fact they were arguing about tyres, whether they put a new tyre in, a new front tyre. And what happens to Jack? Like less than 24 hours later, he goes through that ultra fast turn one. It is absolutely manic how fast they go through there, and the front just tucked on him a little bit. Jack's right arm, the throttle hand came off the bar. He's managed to grab hold of it again. But by that, it's turned itself almost 90 degrees to the right and headed off onto the track. And I think luckily he's gone through that bit of a kiddie litter beforehand and it's actually bucked the bike up that actually spit him off the bike, because he was heading to that wall at approximately, I'd say, 220 kilometres an hour.
Yeah.
That's about how fast they go through that turn one. Brought that same corner, brought an end to Alberto Puig's career many years ago. And since then, they've knocked the walls back rather considerably. And I'd say that wall there will be knocked back rather further for next year as well, because that's part of the track they actually do use for the Le Mans 24-hour races, motorbikes and cars.
Yep.
So there'll be another safety aspect put in there, because it is a very... it's a funnily sort of vision when you get in there. You've got this big wide open space and you come down pit straight and then all of a sudden it funnels in and you can't actually see the apex of turn number two, the left-hander that takes you up under the infamous Dunlop Bridge. So you've got to be committed to the max going through there. And Jack was on a hot lap chasing the Repsol Honda of Marc Marquez and ripped the front end out of the bike and he walked away from it. That's like you're just standing there going, how does anybody get away from that? That was just... amazing, and just shows you the, as we were talking about before, the fickleness of the sport they do. They can be going at 300 miles an hour, and we always think, the safety gear, the tracks are safe, and all this type of thing. But mate, they're motor racing, and if they've got two wheels, four wheels, or whatever, and a lot of moving bits, something can go wrong.
Very much so. We've got 30 seconds left, Braxy. Well, Vinales in qualifying from Rossi and Zarco.
All the Yamaha front row. It's going to be rather interesting. And the biggest, biggest ticket in the lottery for this weekend is what the weather does. We've had three sessions of absolute atrocious conditions when, after the three practice sessions, Scott Redding is the fastest on a Ducati, a two-year-old Ducati, And then at the other end of the scale, in position number 23, is Jorge Lorenzo on the factory Ducati. And in between all that, you had Tatsuo second, Miller third, and Rossi fourth after the three sessions. And now I've got Vinales, Rossi, and Zarco on the front row. And Jack, after that incident, is back there on the fourth row in position number 11. So at least he's fit and well, but I'm reckoning this is going to be one spectacular race because the back of the grid you've got.
I reckon you're right, Braxy. Mate, we've got to go because we've got to get to the news. But once again, thank you so much for your time, mate. We'll catch up again very shortly. News time, 9 o'clock.